You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to the show on this Wednesday, January the 28th. We're almost into February now. My, how time flies. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay is a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their businesses in the U.S. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and an internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. His political development's called The Solution, which is to cap and prioritize government spending. I'm Heather Vail, also known as The Unwrapper, a freelance interviewer and journalist in all media. Welcome to the show, guys.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. So Jay looks just like normal, but Rick has some changes here. He's, well, looks like the green screen's half working because your head keeps cutting out. But other than that, looks good.
My head keeps cutting out?
Yeah, you've got all this visual noise around your head. It's like your head kind of starts disappearing.
Oh, really?
Where the matrix is, yeah. It's hardly noticeable.
It's looking better on my side. I have to look at the tape.
Yeah,
I guess.
I didn't notice it until Heather pointed it out, though. So.
Yeah. Thank you for drawing attention to my hair, or lack thereof, Heather. I really appreciate that.
And no, it's like a halo. It's your whole. Noise. It's your face. It's your shoulders. It's everything.
What?
Yeah, you're. Oh, just, I don't know. You probably have to play with the lighting, but looks good.
Looks great to me. I don't know what you're seeing.
I thought I complimented you the second I saw it. I thought it looked fantastic.
Yeah. All right, so Rick, what's new
besides nitpicky?
Besides, yeah, well, you know, years in TV will do that. So. Rick, besides your new location or your new technology, shall we say, mm-hmm. What else is new in Rick's world?
Yeah, well, I should mention this is not a green screen. This is a hovercraft floating over Denver. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Not.
Yeah. What's happening in my life is I'm just having fun here working the capital of Colorado, lobbying for the Convention of States to cap the federal government so that all the states can prioritize spending on their own and create 50 different experiments for how best to govern.
Okay, nice. And Jay, what's new in your world? Can you top that?
I can't top that. No, I cannot. I've just been still doing, follow from CES. I was up now, very late last night doing a lot of reading.
I think I heard that you got a new job as a lobbyist for Philip Morris. Is that correct?
Yeah, I want more people to smoke. It's a fantastic thing. For the record, I do not smoke.
Why did our radio producer think that you had advised him to start smoking again? Where did that even come from?
I think he was trying to be funny.
Oh, okay.
So he was just setting you up.
And clearly,
the producer does. Is that it? This is the producer conspiracy theory. A vast producer network of conspiracies.
Well, see, I thought it might have been a callback. I thought it was maybe a callback to something you said on the show.
It very well may be. Not that I remember, but
okay.
So, thus making it not a great callback, but
right, yeah. Because when none of us remember what the original statement was, then it's kind of hard to make that connection.
or at least the last one.
Yeah. When callbacks fall flat.
Yes.
All right, so Rick, now that you're here with your nice, beautiful scenery, this is a good opportunity to tell everybody more about The Solution. What exactly does it mean to cap and prioritize?
Well, the idea is very simple. The political right wants a more limited government in general. The political left in general wants a more helpful government. And no one has ever figured out how to do both at the same time to make both sides happy. And cap and prioritize is that discovery. So step one is to cap the heck out of government and at a minimum make sure that it's sustainable fiscally. But there's actually an ideal balance point where if we keep the growth of social spending, for example, such that it grows with population and inflation, meaning it keeps the purchasing power of government the same, the tax rates that are needed to support that level of spending can constantly shrink because the economy grows faster than that on average. So the political right will like that. And yet we can take that constant purchasing power and divide it among the states and have every state have an experiment for how best to prioritize it. And as ideas compete for this limited money in a prioritized budget, we will see better and better ways to spend that constant purchasing power. In other words, we will guarantee an increase in how effective and efficient government is at helping people, even as we constantly lower taxes. And so this is the union of the values of the left and right, and we call it cap and prioritize.
Okay, you know what was really cool about that? We can clip out that little piece, and there's a video just explaining the whole thing.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
Denver in the background.
The Denver model.
Yeah.
And edit out the visual noise.
No.
You mean my head?
No, can't do that. No, unfortunately, you can't Photoshop video. Or if you can, I don't know how.
Well, you can, but it requires a Hollywood type budget, I'm pretty sure.
Right, so. Yeah, we're not going to do that. So, but, all right, so what do you think? You guys want the top story? Should we go on to that?
Nah.
Yeah?
Well, are you going to guess what it is?
I can't guess what it is. I've literally been, in the bunker here, working and doing some, a lot of research and reading and stuff like that. So I literally have no idea what's going on in the world other than there's a gigantic storm on the East Coast. That's
you kind of look like you've been living in a cave there, Jay. I believe that. It totally makes sense. Yeah. Huh? Yeah. And your office is very cave-like, it's very dark.
It's actually very light. It just shows up dark on the hangout.
And you got scruff
and
on your
can't
face.
Be the top story.
Like you haven't shaved in a couple weeks.
I know.
Yeah.
A couple days. It's been a
couple days. Oh, okay.
I shaved on Friday. I had to be presentable.
Okay, so it's almost a week. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, it's good to know that we're worth a shave. Yeah. So, all right, no guesses from Jay.
This is a look.
Oh, it's a look now. It's not just that you've forgotten to shave since Friday. It's actually a look now. Okay. Rick, what do you think the top story is going to be?
I think it's kind of obvious. I don't know where Jay has been hiding under a rock here, but clearly the top story is GoDaddy's Super Bowl commercial about the puppy and the controversy regarding that puppy. That's the top story, I'm sure.
I didn't hear about the puppy. Maybe we can talk about that later in the show.
Yeah. it was something having to do with it. The ad sold the puppy or something like that.
Yeah, the full story here is that GoDaddy had this commercial for the Super Bowl, and they released it early to get more press about it. And you see this little puppy falling off the truck and then, fighting his way home through rain and over railroad tracks and so on. And finally the puppy gets home and the woman who apparently is the owner says, "Buddy," and welcomes the puppy into her arms as he jumps up to her and says, "I'm so glad you're back because we just sold you on our new website from GoDaddy." And the controversy is that of any product you might want to sell online, puppies would not be it if you are a puppy lover, because there are people who buy puppies for bad purposes. And so it's very important, if you're in that industry, you understand this, that you want to screen the purchaser of the puppy. Whether you're an amateur in-home breeder or a professional breeder, you want to make sure the puppy is going to a good home. And that's not possible just over an internet relationship purely. So that's the controversy, and really it's a good case of lobbying, in that it's that wasn't GoDaddy's intention. They were just trying to be cute and funny at the same time, and I think on that level the ad works well. But there is the issue of no, that's the wrong way to sell a puppy on the internet, and since that's GoDaddy's business is helping people sell things or do things on the internet, GoDaddy was forced essentially to backtrack very quickly, because they don't want to be associated with the wrong way of selling on the internet.
Right. Yeah. Now, Just a disclaimer there, I've actually been doing a lot of research on dog breeders lately because I've been doing some writing for a big pet supply company, and you know, just in the course of researching, a lot of dog breeders have linked to that site. So I have looked at various online dog breeder sites, and some of them do that relationship on the internet, but they have forms that need to be downloaded and filled out and sent back before the sale is made. However, some of them are selling remotely, and yeah. I don't know that's necessarily that they need to see face to face. I don't know.
It's not illegal. It's simply a question of puppy morality, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And there's also the issue of adopting a pet as opposed to, you know, getting a purebred and all that, where there's a great need as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Rescue puppies. Okay. Yeah. So what is the top story, if not that?
And by the way, you guys can't see her, but my rescue Pomeranian is down there behind me. I can't say she's a purebred. Because she's a rescue, she was a stray. But
right.
I did adopt my dog from a shelter. So actually, from a dog rescue organization, they take them from the kill shelters,
right?
And then they foster them out until someone adopts them.
So. Congratulations, Heather! You are now officially better than us.
All right, I always was. Come on. Was it any question? One of my cats was a rescue from the Humane Society, and one of my cats was not. So,
okay.
There we go. All right, top story, out of Washington.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I've been there.
Yes. Challenged by Republicans, today Attorney General nominee Loretta Lynch defended President Barack Obama's decision to shelter millions of immigrants from deportation, although they live in the country illegally. She said that under the administration's policy, the Department of Homeland Security is focusing its efforts on the removal of the most dangerous of the undocumented immigrants among us. Lynch made her remarks in the opening moments of a hearing into her appointment as the nation's first black female attorney general. It's the first confirmation proceeding since the Republicans took control of the Senate earlier this month. Lynch, who's a daughter of the segregated South, was accompanied at the hearing by about 30 family members and friends. Among them were her father, who's a retired minister, her husband, and several members of her college sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, wearing their trademark red. Settling into the witness chair for what promised to be a long day of questioning, Lynch promised a fresh relationship with law enforcement and with Congress. She pledged to fulfill her responsibilities with integrity and independence, directing her remarks to the panel led by Republicans who say Attorney General Eric Holder has been too willing to follow President Barack Obama's political agenda. Lynch, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York, is widely expected to win confirmation easily, if only because Republicans are so eager for Holder's tenure to end. He's been a lightning rod for conservative criticism, clashing with Republicans and becoming the first sitting attorney general held in contempt of Congress. In testimony delivered before she was questioned, Lynch said that if confirmed, she would focus on combating terrorism and cybercrime and would protect the vulnerable from criminal predators. She also promised a fresh start in the relationship between law enforcement and the communities that they serve. Lynch's hearing comes amid a nationwide spotlight on police tactics in the wake of deaths of black men at the hands of white police officers, as well as the slaying last month of two officers in New York City. It's an issue that Lynch, 55, is deeply familiar with. Lynch helped prosecute the New York City police officers who severely beat and sexually assaulted Haitian immigrant Abner Louima in 1997. Her office in New York is currently leading a civil rights investigation into the police chokehold death of Eric Garner in Staten Island last summer. Lynch has been the top prosecutor since 2010 for a district that includes Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, and Long Island, and that's a role that she also held from 1999 to 2001. So, there you have top story. Jay, any comments?
It seems to be she gave a fairly sort of, uncontroversial talk, sort of boilerplate stuff that nothing that anyone can really be angry about. I mean, I can certainly enjoy the fact that she's going to focus on cybercrime. Cybercrime and terrorism, by the way, are not necessarily two separate things. A lot of the terrorist organizations are actually going to be focusing more on cybercrime in the upcoming months and years, because that's a good way to destabilize sort of country or a society.
Are you endorsing that terrorists use cybercrime?
No,
that sounded like an endorsement.
Coming soon to you.
Yeah, exactly.
A terrorist attack from ISIS on your computer. No, not at all. I think it didn't say anything in the story, unless it did, I missed it, about the Republicans being upset about this confirmation. They seem to be welcoming her over Eric Holder, which is understandable. It's historic in the fact that she's black and a woman, and from what I can tell so far, seems quite competent. So
yeah, she's going out of her way right now to appease the Republicans. So she's trying to ease that relationship.
I don't know if I'd use the word appease. That's a better word. Yeah, because I mean, Eric Holder was always very confrontational, to the point where, again, as the story said, was held in contempt basically for pretty much for lying in front of Congress. There were political things too with Eric Holder as well. So this, I think, is it appears to be a welcome change all around.
Okay. All right, so let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue discussing this story. We'll be right back in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Rick Raddatz and Jay Amernick. Now, before the break, we were talking about the top story, which is nominee Attorney General Loretta Lynch having her hearing today, and seems like she wants to play nice with the Republicans in Congress. So we heard some of what Jay had to say. Now let's hear what Rick's commentary is on the story.
Well, we can very clearly know exactly how she'll behave as a general attorney general, by her past actions. And a very interesting case here is where she was in charge of a case that lasted 3 years, where the IRS basically took $446,000 out of a small business's bank account, because even though they did not violate the law, the IRS suspected that maybe they may have some other way. Meaning, the law says you cannot any deposit over $10,000 must be reported to the IRS, and they only ever deposited between $5,000 and $9,000. Now, they claim that's just their current business stream of income. That's what they have going on. And the IRS didn't believe them. So they took all their money and kept it during the investigation, which has run into 3 years. And this investigation was only dropped this week with the announcement that she is now the nominee for the Attorney General of the U.S. So that, to me, the timing is a little suspicious there. And the fact that she, I believe she has some discretion over what cases she pursues within her territory there. And so I pin this one on her. This is a weird case, and I need to learn more about it. But so my prediction is that she will get confirmed, and she will become the U.S. Attorney General. And I think she will be better than Eric Holder in the objective sense of doing the job well in general. But I think, as this case with the IRS shows, the potential for abuse is still there. She still comes at it from a perspective that is against my philosophy in terms of how the government should run. And so that worries me a little bit. But I think she will be better than Eric Holder.
Okay, so did the company get their money back?
Just recently, yes.
Interesting. Okay. So in what ways does she go against your philosophy?
Well, if someone is coming at the governing job from the perspective of our founding fathers, then they believe the powers of the federal government are very limited and enumerated, and that's it. Everything else reserved to the states and or the people. And so the idea of taking this amount of money, almost $500,000, from a small business and keeping it for 3 years, even though they never violated the letter of the law of, you know, not reporting more than $10,000 of, or not never depositing more than $10,000 at a time, you know, they were practicing their exercise of freedom, essentially, following the law. And based purely, apparently, on suspicion, they seize all that money. Now, if that money was seized after a jury, through due process, found that they were guilty of something, okay, that makes more sense. This has gone on for 3 years, and they haven't found anything on this company. And that to me is a form of government theft, and that's what our Constitution is trying to fight against.
Yeah. Okay. Jay, do you have any comments on that part of the story?
No, I hadn't heard that story, but I'm in agreement with Rick. It seems like this was what could best be described as kind of government bullying, and trying to kind of make an example out of this company. And taking their money, which they need to operate. I don't know how anybody can describe that as being good for the economy. So,
okay. So, do we want bullies in the attorney general position?
No,
we do not.
No, that's why I'm a bit concerned. But I do believe she will be better than Eric Holder. This is not something that Mrs. Lynch pursued personally. You know, like, she didn't create this problem. This problem exists all across the country. This idea of IRS, confiscating money prior to any crime being proved, et cetera. So this is truly an IRS or a structural problem with government. However, and she is charged with enforcing the law. So you might say that it's really the bad law driving it, but there is discretion that these attorneys general have at the state level and at the federal level. And so I question her discretion in this case, and we'll just have to see.
Okay, so there's a law that money can be temporarily at least confiscated without anything being proven, even though we're told that the legal profession is all about being innocent until proven guilty.
Well, yeah, they're seizing it, I would guess, as saying this is evidence. Is that how they spin it?
That's how they spin it, yeah.
I'm looking through the story right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know enough about the details of the case. And there's always two sides to a case, but this was dropped.
Actually, three.
There's three sides right. to a case. Okay.
Yeah, here's hers and everyone
side,
else.
Your side and the truth.
And the truth. Well, yeah.
Well, then there's four, because there's the two sides, and then there's all the witness, all the, you know, the audience, the peanut gallery, the American people watching the story.
Third party.
And then there's the truth.
Yeah.
Just watch Rashomon again and you'll get it.
Watch what? What did you say to watch?
Rashomon. It's a Kurosawa film. The story's been retold millions of times. It's where an incident happens, and then you see it replayed again and again by different people's point of view and perspective.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. This case, for example, was handled by Lynch, and then officially dropped by Lynch. Who knows what political pressure she was under to drop it, or if she was just. That was apparently in response to a New York Times front page article. And an editorial on the Wall Street Journal. So, political pressure works.
Yeah.
For good and for evil, but it works.
Yeah. For better, for worse.
And Rick, Rick had mentioned different pressures, when one is sort of you know, one position versus another. And that's the old saying in Washington, it's where you stand depends on where you sit. So that is that further sort of accentuates Rick's point about her saying one thing possibly and then doing another when she's in office because their pressures are different and so forth and so on.
Yeah. Right. Well, isn't this something you talk about a lot, Jay, that people make promises on the way in and then once they're in office, it all falls apart because it's all they realize it's not what they thought?
That's part of it. A lot of times it's sometimes those promises, they have no intention of keeping them, and they know damn well that's not how it works, but they put on a face for the vox populi who don't know any better. In many other cases, as a matter of fact, the President of the United States right now is a fantastic example of that. In 2007, he was the co-sponsor with Sam Brownback. So if you can find sort of two more opposite ends of the political spectrum of the Iran Sanctions Enabling Act, and then recently comes out and says, I don't want any sanctions. So again, that's an example of where you stand depends on where you sit. So the pressures are different when he is in the White House. He happens to be wrong on the sanctions right now, but that's a different story.
And to bring this back to cap and prioritize, as long as we are divided as a nation about freedom versus social justice, then we're going to have these two sides, we're going to have all these arguments, and this will be a very dramatic difference in opinion. And meanwhile, our country will continue to slide nearer and nearer the fiscal cliff. So it's only after cap and prioritize is implemented reasonably well, not perfectly, but reasonably well, that we can start to see that, okay, look at our economy. It's booming. Okay, look at the people who need help most. We're starting to help them. It's working really well over here in Colorado. It's working kind of okay over here in Vermont. It's working beautifully over in wherever. So we can start to have different experiments and draw from each of these experiments. As soon as we start to see real results in terms of helping the people who need help most, within a constrained budget and perhaps even a shrinking tax rate, then the energy from our current political divide will just fade away, as it always has in history. And it might take a few generations, but and then we'll be pivoted on some other issue. Could be abortion. It could be foreign policy. Could be artificial intelligence. Could be nanobots. Who knows? Okay, that'll be another generation. But what we do know is that history progresses towards something good. There's a pressure that pushes humanity to a better place. Not in a straight line. There was the Dark Ages, for example, but there's still this pressure that says, look, wherever we are now, that things that works, tend to stick around, and things that fail tend to fade away. So over time, that pressure pushes humanity into a better place. So I'm confident, I'm optimistic that we will solve this current political divide, and then we will argue about something else.
Okay. All right, so let's take another quick break. We'll be back in a few minutes with Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-host Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Now, before the break, Rick was giving us a wrap-up on how everything that we talked about so far in the show fits in with cap and prioritize, and he was kind of waiting for commentary, which we ran out of time for, so I'm going to let Jay give commentary on Rick's wrap-up. What do you
well,
think?
Actually, if I jump right into the insights perspective, because it actually is commentary on that, oddly enough.
It is. How did that happen?
Magic.
Are you like?
I have my ISIS computer spies working for me.
Yeah, it almost feels like Jay's clairvoyant.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. So again, I was watching a TED Talk. We were talking a little bit about TED Talks before the show. A gentleman by the name of Nadi Raju. I don't know if I got his name right, but I hope I did. And he is talking about sort of these rural communities in Southeast Asia who have come up with R A D J O U.
Okay.
I believe I got that right, Raju. Anyway, they basically, with very limited resources, have to come up with solutions to their problems. This sounds a little bit like cap and prioritize, and the experiments of the 50 states having to come up with ways to address their problems with X amount of dollars. And one of his sort of key pieces was not only to sort of make do with what you've got resource-wise, but to make it better. And I thought that was so brilliant, and it really does tie into this whole concept of the 50 states and their experimentations to come up with problems to their solutions to their unique problems. You know what's going to work in North Dakota is not going to work in Florida, and so forth and so on. And that's why the more the federal government, of course, is out of it, because the federal government likes to do sort of blanket things. What works for Florida is going to work for South Dakota, and so forth and so on, which is not the case. They have different climates. They have different flora, fauna. They have different communities, so forth and so on. And there was one other piece. And the thing that sort of got me about it was that this is like really just human nature to sort of address problems ourselves and to find a solution, because there's really no other choice. I was reminded of something in The Art of War. Sun Tzu writes about putting your army on death ground, which means they either have to fight or get killed. And most times they will choose to fight and be successful, because there's, again, no other option. And that's what this is. It's hunkering down, figuring out what the best solution is, and working with what you've got and figuring it all out from there. And that is why Cap'n Prioritize will ultimately be successful, because it's just human nature.
It's just human nature. Okay, well, that's good news for Rick. So, Rick, what do you think? Do you agree, disagree? I'm kind of expecting you to disagree just because you like to, but, you know,
yeah,
he's
I'm
really
trying
supporting
to find,
you.
I'm trying to find a way to disagree, but he's so tying into the core concept here of Cap'n Prioritize, where it's the limits themselves that become good because of the effect of competition within those limits. And so a limit alone might seem bad, but you put them in the context of the competition that results, and then things actually become better. In fact, that's going to be my Rick's rant later on. I'll tie into the counterintuitive nature of that. So
just decide that right now?
I decided that just before Jay did his thing, and it
really?
Darn it, it's in alignment again.
You guys are really in sync today.
Yeah.
Wow. This is where we hear the angels singing something, Alleluia or whatever they sing.
we don't have angels, but we have Jay apparently. Go Jay.
Jay,
let's hear
that again.
Go Jay.
Go Jay.
You want to hear the angels on effect?
Spring back of Jay.
Spring back Jay.
Is it the spring of Jay yet? Is late January the spring of Jay?
No. No, well, maybe in Vegas. It's starting to feel springish already.
Yeah, the fall of Jay.
I thought really a spring back. Away, so. Isn't a spring back a bug of some sort? Or is it a deer? Maybe it's a type of deer.
Well, spring bok is actually something in England, I think. I think it's like a it's a bad neighborhood, I think. Something like that. It's a slang, I think. You can look it up,
okay.
I guess.
I think it's also a type of deer. A bok. Anything with bok on it is usually a type of deer as well.
Or a beer.
So. All right, so... Rick,
a deer or a beer?
A deer or a beer? Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Rick, do you want to expand on anything that Jay said there? Or is he just kind of left
everything?
You know
what? I think it's time for Heather's rant. An impromptu
rant.
Exercise.
What the heck am I going to rant about, you guys?
I don't know. You're Canadian. Rant about Canadian stuff.
Why?
Well.
Well, Jay didn't really rant.
No, it wasn't a rant. But
that wasn't a rant.
I only ranted once, I think.
He nicely talked about his opinion.
Okay, here's what we're going to do.
All right.
You're going to ask a question. It could be any question. Jay has to give an answer, then I have to give an answer, or vice versa. It doesn't matter. And then you pick who answered best.
Okay. All right. What should GoDaddy's next commercial be? Uh-huh. Jay?
It should involve... Yeah, I got to think about it. It should involve, like, Shakira and Rihanna and me somehow. There.
Okay. So, all right.
And maybe Nicole Scherzinger, too.
Okay. I'm sorry. GoDaddy has already done the beautiful model and the ugly dude commercial. So that's been done before.
Wait a minute.
So has Budweiser. And Coors. And probably every beer company in existence. Much,
yeah. There's a lot of examples of that. So sorry, Jay. That's not very original. Okay. Well, what are GoDaddy's options? They could come out with a variation of the puppy and have a different ending. But that might seem a bit too much like pandering. I don't know how they could pull it off. They require a very careful ending so as not to seem weak themselves. So I don't see them doing that. They could go back with kind of the trite model thing that they've been doing, you know, women getting undressed in courtrooms thing that they've been doing for like the last 10 years. But I think they're trying to get away from that. So I don't see them doing that. So they could go with a plain old boring ad. Don't see them doing that.
No.
Now, this is a case where I don't think they expected this controversy. Okay, I think they were trying to play it safe by being funny and tying into the cute puppy finding his way home meme, which has been around for a while on these kind of commercials. So I don't think they anticipated this. So in the past, they've always had backup commercials pre-made. And because they intended for controversy and they had alterations and different endings and the whole bit. So I don't know if they've done that this time. So we'll have to see. But what should they do? What they should do is come up with a completely different and funny concept. It has nothing at all to do with puppies. And it does not tie into the weird stuff they did in the past. That's what they should do.
Okay. So basically... they expect controversy normally, which means they actually welcome controversy, which means they shouldn't be set back by this at all.
Well, I'm predicting that in this case, they might be caught off guard because they were trying to play it safe with the puppy.
Right, but they should feel happy that they finally got that controversy that they've been anticipating these years.
Yes. Yeah. But are they prepared for it? It's not easy to come up with a really funny, clever commercial and film it and produce it in a week and a half, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know.
And also, you know, everybody loves puppies. That's like the epitome of you don't mess with puppies. So, like Jay always uses that as his example, you know, someone taking a stand against, he doesn't like puppies because he doesn't want that bill put through or whatever. So this is playing right into it. Yeah. Now, Jay, I have to say Rick's answer was much better than yours. Do you want another go?
No, but I think they should move completely away, put the nastiness of the puppies behind them, get rid of that, move on from that. You know, as far as the controversy goes, there's sort of the good controversy where they did the thing with Jillian Michaels and the Danica Patrick and everything like that, and maybe
that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny.
And some people probably got upset because of, you know, objectifying women, all the stuff like that. Meanwhile, they're laughing all the way to the bank because their sales increased. Okay, so that's the good controversy. The bad controversy is where you're like, are you kidding me with the puppies? What are you out of your mind?
Well, see, the thing is...
The puppy thing is only an issue because some people who are really into the puppy adoption issue are fanatical about knowing who you're selling the puppy to. And so that small group had a very clear message, and it resonated, and kaboom. So...
and they're very outspoken. And with sex, or, you know, they like to say objectifying women, but ultimately the women in the commercial made the decision and got paid very well. So that's not a weak decision. That's a strong decision. So
I agree.
I think the ad that Jay was referring to, and unless there were others I'm not aware of, was the one where they go into the office building, the office meeting, and all the guys suck in their stomach for the entirety of the presentation, and then they go out at the very end because they don't want to have their flabby stomach being shown to the.
Yeah, that's not objectifying women.
So I think that's taking a pot shot at men. I think it's being funny. Making fun of guys.
Yeah.
It was because they didn't want Jillian Michaels to, you know, beat the crap out of him and make him do push-ups. But
that's
but
not
no, there's one where,
women
where they
either.
Get
I mean, that's what she does.
No, that's not the ad I was talking about. That's not the ad I was talking about. I was talking about the one where she gets down to her skivvies.
I missed that one, unfortunately.
Even so, I mean, what's wrong with that?
I didn't say there was. I'm saying that's good controversy because it increases sales and gets people talking and stuff like that. This is like, what are you out of your mind? This is, you know, the puppies is, that's bad controversy. It's controversy versus buzz.
Well, and then we have to question whether controversy really does increase sales or not. You know,
that's why I said there's good controversy and there's bad controversy.
You think good controversy increases sales and bad controversy doesn't?
Well, there is brand killing controversy does happen, although it is pretty rare. So usually, a little controversy is great. It gets you discussed more and it gets you a lot of free publicity. So usually it's a good thing, although every now and then you go too far and kaboom. What would be a good example of that? I think Walmart got into trouble a couple of years ago with with child labor and that type of thing. That's the kind of controversy they do not want to have at all. They made a lot of changes based on that and aggressively pivoted away from that. So they steered clear of the crash. But if they had not responded that aggressively, they would have crashed as a company, I believe, because that kind of thing can truly affect things. I think Microsoft, actually is a little bit different. It's not so much controversy, but you know, if a certain brand sticks to you, then you can't get away from it. And so, you know, Apple's the cool company, Microsoft is kind of the geeky, you know, company, and Microsoft has not been able to shake that. So they keep.
Are you going back to the "I'm a Mac, I'm a PC" commercials? You think that really had that effect?
I think Apple didn't invent that difference. Apple leveraged that difference in those ads, and they were very effective. That was part of the new ascendancy of Apple.
Meanwhile, you look around a restaurant and you see everyone who's over 60-ish with iPhones, and you see all the kids with their Android devices. So I don't know what that says.
Well, that's because Apple chooses to price their products very high because they can. And then the kids who might not have as much money, the parents are paying for it, and the parents don't want to spend all the money on the iPhone. They can get the same effective thing, and the kids can handle the technology. Whereas a lot of adults like the iPhone because they don't want to get into all the technology of the Android. So, you know, that just speaks to the power of the marketplace, that there's different solutions for different people. And, Apple has to keep on reinventing itself because of the competition. And so bringing this back to cap and prioritize, we need that same kind of competition to happen within the government. We need results to matter. And the only way that's going to happen is if the budget's capped, the power to regulate and tax are also capped or effectively capped. And then within that power sphere that they do have, ideas have to compete. So the best ideas win.
Okay. So let's not have a final break. Let's just go right into Rick's rant because can't wait to hear what you're going to rant about today.
Okay.
Go for it.
Well, the rant today is about the power of being counterintuitive. Okay. A lot of life is counterintuitive. And so if you're a person that only really dives into an issue deep enough to have an emotional response and you trust that emotional response, you're going to be right a lot of the time. But whenever the solution is counterintuitive, you will be wrong. Okay? Unless by luck, your intuition was counter to the norm. A good example of that is at the founding of our country, the common sense wisdom, the intuition by all the people who were educated was that this idea of democracy can't work. You need the power of a king, a monarch, and hopefully a benevolent one, but you need that kind of power to keep a country of any size in line. Otherwise, you have factions squabbling and fighting, and it just melts down. And what James Madison, and he trusted a few philosophers that he really respected, Montesquieu and John Locke in particular, I believe, he believed that if it's structured right, all these factions could actually keep each other in check. And so it's this idea that factions were not just something we can work with. They were actually essential to the preservation of freedom and the success of a republic if properly designed is counterintuitive. And James Madison was proven correct. Factions do compete. Now, what James Madison missed, and this is what I'll talk about here in this segment, is that voter ambition, okay, the way that you act as a voter in the voting booth, that is as dangerous and also as harnessable as private ambition or political ambition or foreign ambition. And so James Madison got the design of government right when it came to private ambition, and that's capitalism. He got it right when it came to political ambition, that's our constitutional compound democratic republic. And he got it right when it came to foreign ambition in terms of having a very unlimited, powerful standing army that could defend the country. And what he missed was voter ambition. And so when we vote our ideas into government, because we're not just voting right now for a politician, we're also voting for the ideas that they believe in. And so when we push our ideas into government, we need these ideas to compete. And we need the best ideas to win based on results and the worst ideas to fall off the cliff. Now, here's the counterintuitive part. If you want to constantly improve government, you need to have better and better ideas being pushed off the cliff. Now, that seems a little weird. It's counterintuitive. But here's the logic. No matter what, our government budget is limited in some sense, whether it's economic limits or political limits or practical limits, whatever. There is a limit to how much we can spend. So at some point, you can't spend more. You got to spend better. And the only way to spend better is to prioritize and let these ideas compete and throw something off the cliff. And if you want a constantly improving government, therefore, you have to be willing to throw better and better ideas off the cliff. That's the sign that you're constantly improving. And right now we have a government that is so unwilling because of the political pressures to throw anything off the cliff. We just get a bigger and bigger, stupider and stupider government. And at some point, we're going to collapse, just as every other country in the past has if they don't correct themselves. So the rant today is about how important it is to think through the problem fully and be willing to trust even counterintuitive solutions if you've done your homework.
Okay, Rick, you know, it almost sounds like you're trying to turn politics into capitalism.
Well, I am. The larger theory is called pentonomics because there are five economies. There's capitalism, democracy, and diplomacy. Those are the three we have working right now. But we also have to have this public resource economy, this collective resource economy. In other words, we have to use all these ideas that voters push into government. We have to have all of that pressure in some sort of competition so that the best things win. And then there's also an economy about how we, as a species, economize resources over the long term. So I call this the economy of future resources. But the structure of an economy is the same in all of these cases. The actual implementation is a little different, but the structure is the same, meaning you need to stop people from stealing, and then you need to set the price right. And there's mechanisms in all of these areas to do that. So cap and prioritize. The cap stops the collective from stealing from itself, and the prioritizing sets the price, meaning if you want to do something new, you have to agree on what to throw away, what to throw over the cliff. And you want the least important thing to be thrown over the cliff. And so that's where prioritizing comes in. So, yes, we want to bring the structure of capitalism into government. And the way you do that is cap and prioritize.
I wonder what would happen if we threw Jay over the cliff.
Lawsuits.
Jay, jail time. Jay, any commentary on the rant?
So it's interesting because the whole point of the concept of counterintuitive is actually counterintuitive to the way government works now, and that is there's sort of an unwritten rule. It's almost an unwritten amendment to the Constitution, and that is if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which is in itself counterintuitive if you want to move forward and improve upon things. And one of the things I mentioned in the Inside Perspective was not only making do, but making better. And that is actually also counter. This is one giant counterintuitive clash of the titans, because the government's way of thinking is in fact counterintuitive, but then you have to sort of oppose that with more counterintuitivism to their counterintuitive. It's a little bit of a labyrinth.
Yeah.
I apologize.
We need a minotaur. We need a piece of string.
Yes, where's the string? Another example of counterintuitive is something I just thought of and then I forgot.
Did it have anything to do with a string?
No. The minotaur thing got my mind off of that. So thank you, Heather. I completely forgot the point.
That, Jay, by the way,
Jay,
is a callback.
Jay, what do you? Yes, exactly. Jay, what do you think his point was supposed to be?
Yeah. Say your thing again, Jay. I'll remember what my point was then.
I don't think I can.
Yeah.
He was saying that counterintuitiveness is counterintuitive, which makes it counterintuitive, which is therefore counterintuitive.
Yeah.
That's not quite what I said.
What'd you say?
I said the government's thinking is in fact counterintuitive, and the only way to oppose that is with the counterintuitive thinking of Cap'n Prioritize. Yeah, I simplified.
Why is Cap and Prioritize counterintuitive? It's not really counterintuitive.
It's counterintuitive to what the government, how the government operates.
If you're naturally on the political right, Cap and Prioritize makes all the sense in the world because you're already for the cap to protect freedom from government going too far in the name of good intentions. And who's against prioritizing? Nobody who's smart. You have to be pretty greedy or pretty foolish to be against prioritizing. And so if you're on the political right, cap and prioritize is a pretty natural thing. If you're on the political left, though, and you want to help people better and better through government spending, a cap is counterintuitive because you want to help people more, and a cap forces you to spend less. But it becomes intuitive when you realize that, hey, there's a limit to how much we spend anyway. Going over the cliff and having a horrendous depression isn't going to help anyone in that scenario. So let's avoid the fiscal cliff, and then within that limit, let's compete. Let's have ideas compete so that the best idea wins. So that's a logical argument, but you have to fight against this counterintuitive idea that limiting government is the path to a more helpful government. That is not intuitive if you're on the political left.
Okay, but you repeatedly say that the political right has more weight, more sway, so more people.
No, when did I ever?
You said it was 40% right.
No.
20% left.
I brought up those numbers to say that a lot of people think the right has more power because of those stats. 40% claim that they're conservative, 30% claim they're moderate, and 20% or so and change claim that they're liberal. But the truth is that most of those moderates are actually liberal, okay?
Okay.
In their policies or progressive, and so at least they are fiscally conservative and socially progressive at the same time. But if given the choice, they're gonna tilt towards helping people rather than being fiscally conservative. And so it ends up that our nation is pretty evenly divided, and you can see that in the elections. The divide, the philosophically, is pretty clear, and we're switching parties. Every other election is a wave for one side or the other. So it's all about the issue of the moment, it seems like, because we are that divided.
But for moderates, it is pretty intuitive because it combines the best of the left and the right. So
for moderates, cap and prioritize, the kind of caps we're talking about here are pretty extreme if looked at alone. You need to have the prioritize as part of the discussion to understand that, this is how we're going to help people within the caps. So the overall message is arguably moderate, but very few moderates would naturally go for a libertarian style cap or the progressive pursuit of social justice. So it's really all sides here have to kind of think a little deeper than they are right now.
Yeah, and this is really interesting because you guys said several times on the last show, I believe it was, about how this is just the course of nature and it's automatically going to happen. So now you're saying counterintuitive, which is kind of counterintuitive to what you said before.
Well, it will happen. It will happen in spite of the counterintuitiveness. Now, okay. I have to run up the Capitol, so I think we're done, right?
Yeah, we're done the show today. Okay. So thanks, everyone, for listening to The Political Fix. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Jay. On behalf of myself and both Rick and Jay, we'll be back with you next week. Have a fantastic week. I'm Heather Vail.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern at politicalfixradio.com.